Welcome to the Practical Backpacking Podcast.
This is episode 48, and I'm Bernie Wilt. This episode features details regarding cold weather insulation clothing in the first descent line from Eddie Bauer. To get the facts on layering, insulative clothing, and insight into the history and outdoor gear offerings of Eddie Bauer, I speak with the company's Director of Technical Outerwear and Technical Sportswear, Andrew Turner. Andrew has an extensive knowledge of Eddie Bauer products and the technology that goes into making them. He's both experienced in and enthusiastic about getting out into the backcountry. Here's my conversation with Andrew Turner.
This is Andrew.
Andrew, how you doing?
Hi, Bernie. How are you?
Great.
Good, good.
You staying dry up there?
Yeah. Things are not too bad right now. It's been a great weekend, actually. We're getting a bunch of snow up in the mountains.
Very cool. What do you normally do during the rainy and snowy season in your area?
My family and I like to get up in the mountains, and we do a lot of trail running and hiking. My son is 4 and my daughter is 2, and I'm going to try and get them on skis this winter. I stay busy skiing and snowboarding and also playing hockey during the winter. I'm an ice hockey guy.
Wow, that's neat that you get to get out there with your kids, with them being so young.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot of things just in general about what folks are calling nature deficit disorder and some other things, which I think is kind of a goofy term, but the principle is there, which is if kids aren't getting outside, they're not experiencing what hopefully a lot of us experienced when we were growing up. It's just the pleasure of being outside, being active, getting some fresh air, getting exercise, and just exploring around. We live right up on the base of Tiger Mountain out in Issaquah, Washington, and it provides a real easy opportunity for us to be on the trails in literally less than 5 minutes. And so he loves getting out there, and he's to the age now where he can carry his own small backpack and help me carry stuff for his little sister. I carry her and a little baby Bjorn in my front or in my back. And then we go out for just a little bit with our dog, and usually ends up being a great day.
That's really awesome. Yeah, I've heard of that nature deficit disorder. It's amazing how things have got flipped around, you know, and how some people are afraid to go out in the wilderness when there's actually more harm happening in society with regard to bad things that can get you or happen to you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, it's funny because I'm looking actually at an article that I read last week, Tuesday, November 30th. The title is Head Out for a Daily Dose of Green Space. And you're exactly right. There's a quote in here where it says, many people are unfamiliar with the outdoors, they're scared to walk through a park, and they don't know what to do when they get there. And for someone that is passionate about, obviously, the outdoor industry and what we do here at Eddie Bauer and First Ascent, but just someone that's more passionate about getting outside. I grew up in suburban Chicago, and there weren't many mountains out there, but I was in a Boy Scout, and I went to summer camp every summer, and just really loved being outside as much as I could. And to hear that folks are scared to get outside, there's a role I think that we can all play, those of us that love it, just helping them experience that. There's nothing dangerous about it at all. It can be quite safe and obviously really enjoyable. Yeah, it's important for me and my family to get out and do that stuff.
Yeah, it's much like anything else. You know, you take the necessary precautions and you prepare, but it's definitely nothing to be frightened over by any stretch.
Absolutely. And depending on what you're doing, I mean, there's always the sort of basics of, even on a little trail hike or a trek or something, of making sure you've got water and food and a backup layer or two, and making sure you tell folks where you're going, and you have a map or something equivalent. But it's certainly, with a minimal amount of preparation and a little common sense, can obviously be really enjoyable. And for folks that are scared of that, just learning a little bit more about that stuff at their local gear shop or coming into one of our stores or reading about it online, there's really easy ways to prepare that can make it really enjoyable, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. I was in a shopping mall not too long ago, and I was more frightened there than I've ever been in the woods. In some ways, of course, you know what I mean? I wasn't in fear of my life or anything like that, but, you know, I feel much more comfortable out in the wilderness. I adapt wherever I'm at.
Yes, absolutely.
So how far are you from Mount Rainier?
We're about 2.5 hours or so. I think it's about 100 miles. I'm not quite sure. To get down there on a good day, I can usually do it in about 2 hours or so.
Nice, very nice. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's great. I mean, like I said, I grew up in Chicago, and I've been out here for about 3 years, and I never, ever get tired of seeing Rainier in the distance. And every morning I drive my son to school, and we go across a bridge on Mercer Island. over to Mercer Island, and we always look for it. And when it's out, it's just spectacular. It's a beautiful mountain and quite challenging and technical, but just really awe-inspiring. It's great to be so close.
It's an outstanding wilderness area. Every time I go up there, I'm in awe and amazed. I mean, there's just always something new I see, even if I'm at the same spot.
Yeah, that's right. It changes just like everything else. No climb is the same. No trek is the same. The conditions are obviously rarely the same. It's a pretty dynamic place. It's fun.
Yeah, I agree. Could you please share a little bit about Eddie Bauer history and how the first ascent line came about?
Absolutely, yeah. So what a lot of folks don't know about Bauer is, one, he was a real guy. He was an excellent trapper, hunter, and fisherman, first and foremost. Those were his first loves. And the company was started back in 1920. And without going into a lot of detail, the short history of the company is that Eddie got into the outdoor business. It was a passion of his. He always said that my work was my hobby. And he was out 6, 8, 9 months a year doing as much as he possibly could, as much as he could really get away with in the context of trying to build his company. And his first real breakthrough was when he discovered down and the insulating qualities of down and patented the down jacket in 1936, the first of 11, I believe it was, patents that he would go on to have for down outerwear. And it was because he almost froze to death on a fishing expedition where he was hypothermic. And the story goes that he was falling asleep and that ice was actually caking up on the crown of his back. And his fishing buddy sort of awoke him and found him. And it was then that he knew he had to discover a more efficient way to keep him warm when he was outside doing what he loved to do. From then on, really, he started a sort of love affair with down garments and did a whole bunch of stuff in terms of outdoor outfitting. He outfitted the Army Air Corps and pilots in World War II. He had a relationship with the Army also making sleeping bags for the infantrymen and other folks. And he developed this real loyal following of soldiers and folks that would come back from the war. And his label was stitched into those garments, and they would come back from Europe, and they would seek him out and say, Eddie Bauer, this guy that kept me warm while I was overseas, makes the best outerwear, and I have to have it. And so that started really the business. The legacy of Bauer is in outerwear, or sort of it's the best category that we know how to do, and it led into the golden age of Himalayan mountaineering, as we like to call it, from about 53 to 83. We moved from general sort of outdoor outfitting to expedition outfitting and outfitted, I think it was 14 famous first ascents, first American ascents, worldwide ascents, or route ascents, all over the top mountains in the Himalaya and throughout the world. So in 1953, we outfitted the first American expedition attempting to climb K2. And though they were unsuccessful, Eddie and the team worked real collaboratively to try and develop the lightest, warmest down jackets for that expedition. In 1963, Jim Whittaker summited Mount Everest as the first American to do so, outfitted in Bauer outerwear. And then from then on, scores of expeditions would go off into other places in the Himalaya, the Yukon, Alaska, and they wore Bauer down outerwear. The company then kind of took a little bit of a turn, frankly, in the mid-'80s. Mid to late 80s, and lost its way a bit and became a little bit more of a women's fashion brand. Not what we had been known for, not what we had been doing successfully for over 80 years, and sort of not really what the core of Eddie Bauer was. We lost our way a bit, and since sort of the late 80s, early 90s, until about 2007 or so when our new CEO, Neil Fiske, started, we were in decline, frankly. And what we've been trying to do over the last 3 years, and really this is the genesis of First Ascent, is to rebuild that dominant position that we once had in technical performance outerwear. And that's where First Ascent comes from. What we're trying to do is develop the best gear in the world for some of the best mountain guides in the world on the expeditions, to outfit them on expeditions that they go on. And that is the thrust of the company now and forever forward, is just trying to reclaim the heritage that we sort of proudly had and abandoned for a little bit. Everything that we do now is focused on that goal. We like to say around here that, you know, before there was Patagonia and North Face and Arc'teryx and Marmot and everybody else, exceptional companies to be sure, there was Eddie Bauer. And we believe that there's a certain birthright that we have to the notion of technical expedition outerwear. We just really have to go and prove back to the customer that it's in our DNA and our heritage and that we're back again.
Well, it's very fascinating and interesting, and I don't think a lot of people really know about this long history of Eddie Bauer. And I think, as you mentioned, there was a little bit of maybe getting off focus there for a while. I think a lot of businesses end up doing that sort of thing. Maybe they follow market trends or something and get away from their root goal. And then sometime maybe somebody says, hey, you know, we've gotten away from what we're all about. Let's snap back because that's what we do best.
That's exactly right. And I'll be candid. Before I started working at Bauer a few years ago, I hadn't been in an Eddie Bauer store for probably 10 or 12 years. The product didn't really speak to me, you know, as a guy that likes to get outside. It wasn't really the sort of lifestyle that I was leading in terms of the products that they were selling. And I think you're right. I don't think a lot of customers have any idea about the rich heritage of Bauer. I certainly did not. And yet, the more that you read about it and the more you hear about it, obviously I'm biased because I work here, but there are really, really exceptional stories of guys and gals doing really phenomenal things. I mean, some of the explorations that happened and some of the expeditions that we outfitted and some of the people that we were associated with, obviously way before my time, are fascinating. And these are people that push the boundaries of their physical limits, of just exploration, doing things that have never been done before. It's a pretty remarkable history when you really dig into it. And one of our jobs, really, is to share that with folks. I think that people really like stories. And they especially like stories of great adventure where folks had the courage to go into the unknown and try something that had never been done. And we want to support that. We've got a lot of programs that help support people doing that internally that we've started and sharing those externally. And obviously the focus of our guide team and working with them to develop product. One of the things we really feel passionately about is that we like working with guides because guides help people get outside. They're approachable, they work with people, they help them overcome things that they didn't think that they could do, and simply like we were talking about before, if someone could show up at the bottom of Mount Rainier in flip-flops and a t-shirt, we could outfit them. If they were in good physical condition and were mentally prepared, they could join one of our guides and they could climb Mount Rainier. It's a really exceptional experience. We feel really proud to be able to do that and share that with somebody.
If you don't mind, can you throw out a few of the names? You know, you mentioned such a heritage of different people that Eddie Bauer's been connected with as a company.
Oh, sure, absolutely. So I would be remiss if I didn't talk about our guide team immediately. It's anchored fundamentally by sort of the founding six or seven people. Among them, Ed Viesters, who is obviously sort of America's preeminent, legendary high-altitude mountaineer. He's the only American to climb all 8,000-meter peaks, 14 8,000-meter peaks, without the use of supplemental oxygen. He lives here in Bainbridge Island. There's a gentleman named Dave Hahn, and Dave Hahn has climbed Everest 12 times. I think he's had 15 expeditions. He's also summited Mount Vinson, which is the highest point in Antarctica, several dozen times, as well as Denali, obviously out in Alaska, I think 20 or 25 times or so. I'm not exactly sure of the numbers, but certainly Dave is a legend in high-altitude mountaineering because of his guiding work on Everest, but also a very great guy that helps people reach the summits of those other epic mountains as well. Peter Whitaker is our third sort of elder statesman, if you will, a guy that really sort of grew up in an American family of mountaineers. Jim obviously summited Everest as the first American. His father, Lou, started RMI, which is the largest guiding service in North America, back in the mid-60s. And Peter sort of continues to carry that mantle as the current owner of RMI and Whitaker Mountaineering. And then we have a group of up-and-coming folks that we like to call sort of a little bit younger crowd, three people. Chad Peel, who is a specialist in ice guiding and ice climbing, as well as obviously a mountain guide. He lives in Colorado. Seth Waterfall, who has been to the summit of Everest, I think, twice now, and also guides all over the world. He's been to the Caucasus in Russia. He's been other places and also guides on Denali. And then Melissa Arnott. And Melissa is the only American woman to summit Everest three times successfully. She likely will be going back in the spring. Not quite sure of her plans yet, but she is a real treasure in American mountaineering and the lead anchor of our female guide team. Jake Norton is our expedition photographer and also a really accomplished high-altitude mountaineer. Three summits of Everest, I think, and a couple more expeditions. And then a woman named Caroline George, who is a recent addition to our team, is also a fantastic ice climber. And so those might not all be household names, for sure. I think Ed probably is, and potentially Dave, for those people that are really into this kind of thing, and Peter. But the other younger guy team are really phenomenal because they provide a great balance of the older and the younger views on gear and technology and climbing styles and everything else. It's a really good mix that we have on our team.
There's definitely a group of people there that know something about what it means to stay warm on the mountains and out in the cold weather. So I know a lot of that expertise comes into play with putting the line together that we'll be discussing.
Indeed, that's right. And what I would say with that is I think a lot of companies talk about this, and I don't have any direct experience working for any of the other folks in the industry, but we take it very, very seriously to the point where every single guide has veto power over any product. And if they don't feel that it's ready for market, if they're not comfortable with it, if they don't think it's going to perform, if they're not happy with the functionality, the fit, or anything about it, they can nix it. They can say, you know what, Andrew or Eddie Bauer or anybody else, it's not ready. And I'm not ready to sign my name to this, which we literally ask them to do on their hang tags. It seems sort of like an afterthought potentially to some folks when you're looking at it, but their signature on that tag literally means that they've signed off on the product. And as an example, I can tell you that we developed a tent back in 2009 on the sort of Return to Everest expedition, as we called it, and we put a lot of time and energy into it. We had several prototypes. The team brought it to Everest. They got up to Camp 2, and they didn't feel comfortable bringing it past Camp 2 up to Camp 3 and Camp 4. We had made that tent. We were sourcing that tent. We had liable fabric and poles and everything else against that tent, and we scrapped it because they weren't ready to go. And that's just a level of commitment that we owe these guys to make sure that if they're going to put in the time to really build the gear they need to stay dry and warm and as comfortable as you can possibly be in some of these conditions, that we're going to stand by them and let them know that if it's not ready, it's not ready. That's really something we take real seriously around here.
Yeah, that's great, because I know all of us have experience with products that we feel like should have been stopped somewhere in the process and, and went to market anyway.
Someone asked me one time, they said, well, you say guide built. That's how we talk about it around here. The guide built process is paramount to everything we do. And a gentleman asked me one time, well, how does that show up in product? And I thought that was a really great question, and I'll give you an example. Because it's one thing to say that, it's another thing to say that all of that feedback directly impacts what you do on a daily basis. They're not just signing off on something that I or a designer came up with, they're actually influencing the construction of all these garments. And real quick example is we have a jacket called the Peak 15 down jacket. It's our warmest, puffiest 850 fill jacket, and you could wear it in lieu of a down suit to the summit. I think most folks probably prefer a suit for various reasons. But the guides always talked about when their clients on Rainier were getting cold at 12,000 feet at the top of Disappointment Cleaver, for example, or at High Break just below the summit, and the winds could be 40, 50 miles an hour, it's sub-zero temperatures, their hands are freezing, they've stopped moving, they're sweaty, they're clearly cooling down. The guides immediately ask all the clients to pull this big puffy out of their jacket and put it over all their layers, zip it up, get the hood over their head, and lock in all their body heat so they stay warm. And they said a lot of companies will put this draft tube on the outside of the jacket. And what ends up happening is that the clients, when they're cold and tired and they're trying to fumble around with their gloves, end up getting the zipper caught in that draft tube. And so we left that off. We said, you know what, it has to have a big, chunky, functional zipper, and we're going to leave that thing off so that it makes it that much easier for a client or a guide in a situation like that to get themselves zipped up and warmed up. And that's sort of the most explicit example I have of just how seriously we take what they do and then bring that all the way down into product development.
I guess it goes without saying that probably the majority of listeners are not going to summit Everest. And so what we can take out of this, I think, for a lot of people is that if people are in such extreme conditions, then we can feel a little bit more assured that they're going to work in the types of trails and conditions that we frequent when we go out and experience the outdoors.
Yes, that's exactly right. We know that we're building this stuff for incredibly harsh conditions that 99% of our customers and even myself, you know, may never encounter. But for the folks that do have that desire to go out and explore the unknown and to get into situations that could be certainly dangerous and cold or wet or whatever, we want to make sure that we can outfit them and provide them with gear that performs. And that's the standard to which we try and build all of our stuff Sometimes we get it 100% right. Sometimes we obviously have room for improvement, but the standard is always to be the best, and that's what we're shooting for every day.
So I want to zero in on a few of the first ascent insulation items, but I think it would be a good idea to first go over the concept and practice of layering. Do you mind giving a brief overview of layering?
Sure, absolutely. In general, we think about layering in terms of three basic layers, if you will. There is the first layer, sometimes folks call it a base layer, which is a layer that you put against your skin. And the fundamental goal of that layer is to keep you warm by wicking moisture and sweat away from your body and then drying quickly. If your core is cold and wet, your body has a real hard time warming up. So the first layer is a moisture management layer, we say, and secondarily, it's an insulation layer. The second layer, we think, is once you have that base layer on, you need some insulation if you're in a cold area. And that insulation can come in the form of a shell jacket that will keep you dry in a wet situation, or it can come in a synthetic insulation jacket like Primoloft, a down jacket, lightweight down jacket, or a fleece jacket. The primary goal of that second layer is just to provide you warmth and a certain amount of breathability if you're working hard outside and you're sweating. You want to make sure that you get it away from your skin, and then you allow that sweat to evaporate through that second layer if you're doing anything that's aerobic. And then the third layer is usually one where the goal is protection. Protection from water, in case of a waterproof jacket, protection from extreme cold, like a big puffy parka, or somewhere in between, potentially with a soft shell jacket that gives you a little bit of water protection but a lot of breathability, so that if you're really working hard, you don't wet out from the inside of your garments. You can let that perspiration evaporate through the fabric and kind of escape outside. And so layering at its core, really the principles of those three layers, is to provide you an adaptable system depending on what you're doing. And so you could be in one of those base layers, for example, climbing Rainier. You'll leave the parking lot in a base layer if it's sunny out, and you'll hike all the way up to Camp Muir at 10,000 feet and may never take off that base layer. When you then go for the summit the next day, you'll have an insulating layer, you'll have a shell jacket to keep you warm from the wind and the rain if it's out there, or the snow, and then a big puffy parka over that. So layering fundamentally is an adaptable system that allows you to change your clothing depending on the conditions as they're changing.
Okay, so let's hit the down versus synthetic issue with regard to clothing before we go into some specific items. Many of us know that down can provide more warmth to weight, great compression, but it may not be the best option for very wet conditions. How do you determine if you're going to opt for a down product like the down light sweater or vest or a synthetic insulation layer for a particular trip?
The way I think about it is exactly what you just said, is that the conventional wisdom, which I think is generally accurate, is that if you're going to be in a wet and damp environment where there's a high chance of either excessive rain or just some condition where even if it's not raining, you're going to be damp and wet, synthetic insulation tends to be better because when down gets wet, it loses its insulating value. If you're going to be in a very cold, a very dry environment, like Alaska, for example, or even the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, et cetera, where you tend to get a lot more sunshine and less rain than in the Pacific Northwest, then down is usually a better option because there's no real threat of it getting wet and losing its insulating value. And like you said, it's extremely packable and lightweight, and it actually is the most thermally efficient insulation that's ever been developed. So I just think about generally where I'm going. And if I am not quite sure which to bring, I make sure that if I'm going to bring a down jacket, that I always have some sort of waterproof layer with me, just in general because it's good practice, but also just to make sure that you have it so that you protect your down from getting wet. All of our jackets where we have down in them have a DWR finish on the outside, which is durable water repellent, that will shed light wind and rain and snow. But if you're in a really damp downpour and you can't get inside in a hut or something like that, it's probably better to go with synthetic insulation.
I recently tried the Downlight vest, and I just love it because there's times when I need a little bit of insulation on my chest, but I don't need it so much on my arms. I need those to breathe a little bit more to keep from overheating and sweating. And so, I'll put that on, like you said, in a dry condition. But if I know that things are just going to be just saturated, drenched, then I usually opt for some of the synthetic type options or something that handles moisture a little bit better.
That's exactly right. And what I will say is I've done this before. It's potentially maybe it's not necessarily the lightest approach per se, but there's certainly been positions where I've brought both. I've brought a lightweight synthetic insulation layer, and then because down becomes so light and so packable and so easy to work with, I've brought it along. I've brought a downlight sweater. Actually, we have a downlight hoodie pullover that I've brought along in a couple climbs as almost backup emergency layer if I'm really cold or find myself in an emergency situation where I need even more warmth than what I've got. I keep that in the bottom of my pack. And sometimes I never use it, but I like knowing it's there. And it's so lightweight and packable, like you said, with the downlight vest, that it's just insurance, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, I can definitely see there's some trips where maybe you're not going as far, like long distance hiking, and you could opt to bring another clothing option or insulation option. You may not be carrying as much water because it's readily available all around in the form of snow, or you may not have as much food. You just kind of weigh it all out in your mind and what type of trip and what the conditions are. I know that I tend to prefer the synthetic insulation because of its multi-use for me, because it can also double for me to sleep in, you know, supplementing my sleeping gear if need be. And I find that that works a little bit better, even like in winter hammock camping, because of the fact that it doesn't compress as much and can still give you good insulative properties.
That's right. And I think the interesting thing is we talk to our guides and other folks, our customers, you know, as we're chatting, is the neat thing about layering and about just outerwear in general is that everybody finds their own system that they prefer and that they like. And it changes depending on what they're doing, where they're going, and even maybe the time of year. And some of these niche applications you're talking about, it's really neat. And we like to hear these stories from our customers and talk about these kinds of things with our guide team to make sure that we're providing everybody the items that they need to have really good, fun experiences outside.
The First Ascent insulation products that I'd like to discuss all contain PrimaLoft 1 synthetic insulation. Would you tell me what you know about PrimaLoft 1?
Sure. PrimaLoft is the preferred synthetic insulation that we use for all of our First Ascent products. There are other products out there that PrimaLoft offers, and PrimaLoft 1 is advertised and we believe is the highest performing insulation that PrimaLoft offers on the market for warmth and water resistance, and also for softness and compressibility. It's an ultra-fine microfiber insulation, and it stays warmer when it gets wet and dry than all the other insulations that are out there. Now, PrimaLoft makes other products that are very good. PrimaLoft Sport, PrimaLoft Eco, PrimaLoft Infinity, some other ones. We found in our testing with our guide team that PrimaLoft 1 is the highest performing of their products, and so we use that in First Ascent.
Yeah, and it has nearly the same thermal performance when it's wet as it does when it's dry. Is that correct?
That's correct. I believe that it's about the same, which is remarkable. And there's actually a test I've seen, and I've actually done it myself, where if you can imagine two cylinders, and one has, let's call it, a half a cup of water in it, and the other is empty, and you sandwich a piece of PrimaLoft 1 insulation between those two cylinders, if you then flip the cup over, the water will literally rest right on top of the insulation. It won't go through. It's remarkable. And we're not talking about insulation that is sheeted and non-breathable. It's not like a piece of paper. It is certainly porous. It is just so tightly wound, and they've done something with, obviously, this is the magic sauce that they have, where it can keep you warm, and it can repel all that water, and when it gets wet, it dries and keeps its loft amazingly well.
Yeah, I've seen a test where they'll take the insulation itself and have somebody close their eyes and stand with their hands out in parallel to the floor, and then they will set a piece of the insulation in one of their hands, and while their eyes are closed, ask them which hand it's in. And it's so light that you can't really tell, but if you wait just a few more seconds, you'll begin to understand which hands, and because it'll warm up considerably. And I've actually done that with family and friends and was able to spoof all of them except for one who actually let it sit there long enough for it to warm the hand up.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I've done that exact same test. We take this stuff very seriously, and it's remarkable. I've been really impressed with their products. And the ultimate test for all of us is wear testing in the field. And I can tell you categorically, it performs. We wouldn't run it, and we wouldn't be happy with it if our guide team didn't get out there and tell us everything that you're seeing in your office and you're reading about and the company is advertising is indeed true. And we've been exceptionally impressed with PrimaLoft, and they're a great partner for us.
three of the products that are in the first ascent line that I'd like to talk about specifically are the Igniter jacket, the Serrano jacket, and the Igniter pants. Let's start with the Igniter jacket, and that's made, as I understand, for both men and women. Could you go over some of the features of that?
It is indeed, yep. The Igniter jacket is it's a 100-gram Primaloft 1 insulation. We advertise it as the synthetic belay jacket that our guides use when they're guiding on Mount Rainier. It may be a little light, candidly, for some of the clients that climb. They prefer a big, heavier, puffy-down jacket. But some of the guides that are used to doing this and are maybe a little bit more comfortable in the cold or at least deal with it better, this is the jacket that they use. It's very minimalist. I'm actually looking at mine right now. I wore it to work today. It's on the ground. It's got two hand pockets. It's got an external chest pocket. It's got an internal pocket that can hold a MP3 player with a little portal. And then it's got a hood that fits comfortably over your helmet. That's pretty much it. It is very simple. The insulation really does the job for this jacket. We built it around that weight purposefully and wanted to keep it nice and light and not over-constructed. And so it's a great sort of workhorse piece. And I can tell you, being in the Pacific Northwest, it doesn't really get that cold here. Maybe, you know, every once in a while it dips into the 30s, and I can wear this jacket all through winter without a problem, and it's really the only jacket I need.
For women, it's black or dark plum, and then for men, black or blue, I see.
Black or ascent blue, that's exactly right. And it's a great value. I mean, this is a jacket I think that folks will have, like most of our gear, for quite a while. We say that people will have the jacket until they're tired of the color and want to buy a different one, because we try and engineer them such that they'll last you literally for the rest of your life. That's the standard that Eddie had when he started the company back in 1920, and that's the standard we still try and uphold today.
And it's a little over a pound depending on the size and gender, but as I see it, there's no extraneous features. You know, the fact that, you know, it may weigh a little bit more than some of the lightweight products that I've compared it to on the market, it also has more insulation weight than those. So more weight in the form of insulation that actually provides, you know, a function is great. So in other words, I think the weight is accounted for in the insulation rather than extraneous features.
Yes, exactly. And what I'll say is there are some things consciously where if I just look at the jacket, we could eliminate some weight. There, for example, is a fleece tricot-lined area right when you zip the jacket completely up, right around your face. And we could eliminate that. It's not that heavy. And for folks that are counting ounces, and I know there are folks out there that do that, that's something that we've talked about with our guide team. And yet what we feel is that provides enough comfort when these guys are working day in, day out, and doesn't really add that much weight, where we think it's a feature that is worthwhile and that also contributes to sort of the more flexible nature of the jacket, where it doesn't have to be a hyper-light, minimalist alpine climbing piece. You could ski in that jacket. You could wear it just around town. Obviously, you can do all sorts of cold weather mountaineering, adventuring in this piece. But yeah, you're right. We think about a lot of that stuff quite often and want to make sure that we're striving a nice balance between something that's only made for a very, very small, specific niche of people and a great technical outdoor piece that has a wide range of application. And I think this is a great example of that.
Yeah, and by 100 grams, that essentially means 100 grams per square meter of the material, correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay.
And there's different weights that you have depending on, obviously, the insulation that you choose. Kind of like fleece. Everyone knows fleece comes in different weights. It's the exact same thing with Primaloft.
Okay. And general uses would be maybe like above tree line and cold, wet, blowing wind?
Yep. Anything where you're going to encounter damp, wet conditions. Obviously, it works well in, I won't say extreme cold. You would have to pair it with something else for extreme cold conditions. But it is a great piece when it could be a little wet. And wet could be the form of blowing snow and rime ice and things that where maybe it's not rain, but you're certainly in snow and ice. You can imagine a situation where you're doing a lot of journeying through, I know down in Aconcagua there's these penitentes, which are these large ice features, as ice and snow features all the way up to base camp. If you're going through stuff like that where you're around wet snow and blowing snow, this is a great option for all those kinds of adventures.
Yeah. And this next jacket, the Serrano jacket, now you remember back a couple weeks or so ago when we experienced that Arctic blast that came down and took it into the teens overnight in the 20s during the day there. I took the Serrano jacket out in that, and I do run a little hot than maybe some people. From my torso on up, I tend to get overheated pretty easily. But I had that on in, I'd say, probably an average of around 20 to 22 degrees, somewhere in there. And the only thing that got cold in my body was where I wasn't really wearing enough, but I didn't get cold there, and I didn't have a shell on over it. And the wind was moving a little bit. It wasn't extreme, but enough to know that it was definitely blowing in my face. And when I was done on my trip and I went indoors, I had taken it off, laid it over my arm, and while I was walking around, I went to switch it to put it on another arm, and I looked down and my arm was drenched from just just laying on there because of the warmth that it was providing that wasn't needed at the time because I was indoors.
Yeah.
So it's amazing, and I didn't have any problem with that outside, of course, because it was doing its job and I wasn't overheated or anything.
It's a great piece, and what I'll say is there's different pieces in this space, if you will. The Serrano is made from 60-gram Primaloft 1 insulation, so it's not quite half the insulating value, if you will, of the Igniter jacket, but it's close. We've incorporated some details that are a little bit different that make this a more versatile piece in terms of its application potentially to more aerobic pursuits. I think the Igniter is suited well for things where you're going to be cold and relatively stationary and you just need to stay warm. We have Polartec Power Stretch side panels down the side of this jacket. There's no hood, and it's cut pretty trim. And I think that what we were trying to accomplish with this is a nice, very close-to-body insulation layer that layers quite well, is not bulky at all, isn't very baggy, that keeps you warm, and yet provides a certain amount of breathability if you're on the go and doing things that are active. And so for cold weather running, I run kind of hot too as well, so I might overheat. But for some folks that run a little colder, cold weather running or skate skiing or sort of stop and go hiking and trekking in the wintertime, those side panels on the side, the stretch panels, will allow a lot of moisture and sweat out. And then without the hood on there as well, you know, you can have a hat on, you can be real light and fast. There's internal wrist gaiters, we call them, that also sort of allow you to keep the tops of your fingers and your palms warm. So for trail running, I like that. Some folks for ice climbing like that because it goes under their gloves real easily and keeps their hands warm when they're working with leashless tools and other things. It's a very interesting and very specific piece that we think a lot of folks can find a lot of different uses for. And it's one of our favorites among our guide team.
Yeah, it's definitely great for the winter hiker, backpacker who's, you know, maybe snowshoeing, cross-country skiing type, I think, something that's on the move. I've found it to work really well for me. And that comes in for both men and women. And then the colors, black and coffee, it looks like, for women, and black and blue and red for men.
Correct. Yeah, it's an Adriatic blue and a redwood color, great colors for men. It's a great piece. You know, one of the things you were talking about for folks that are doing cold weather backpacking and other things is I brought this jacket to Aconcagua on an expedition that we went on with our guide team. And I loved it because it was warmer than a fleece. It didn't breathe, you know, quite as well as a fleece, but it was so packable. And because the external shell is sort of that, you know, just a slick nylon that repels just enough water, it was very easy to bring on and off. It didn't get bunched up on my base layers. I didn't have a base layer on top of a fleece jacket. Sometimes I can get kind of bunchy in your arms. It was a real easy piece for me to be able to wear and get in and out of as temperatures changed, as well as I would sleep in this piece at night, kind of like you were talking about before. It was great. Inside my sleeping bag is just an extra measure of warmth as we got up to the high camp. With a hat on, in a bag, I felt, in a just a down bag, I was totally warm, and it was really nice to just know that you could go to a place where you could get warm after a hard day being outside when it got cold.
Yeah, it's definitely extremely comfortable. I mean, it feels just like down to me, and I think most would be just as comfortable in it in terms of its loft and soft.
Indeed, yeah. And, you know, I think there are probably more similarities between down and Primaloft than there are dissimilarities. I think that what you get into the extremes when you talk about insulation failing. And obviously, we have a bias towards down outerwear because it's sort of what we do. And we grew up with that. Eddie invented the down jacket. We invented, really, the first down sweater back in 1954. And it's something in our heritage. And yet, some people are allergic to down, or they don't like down, or they like synthetic insulation for other reasons. And so I do think that they're pretty close substitutes, and some of it comes down to personal preference. And that's why we carry both. in the first ascent line to make sure that we're offering people the peace they need for what they want to do.
Certainly. So the Igniter pants, these are for men only. Do you have a women's version on the horizon, or is there something else that you recommend currently before we get into the Igniter pants?
We did have the women's Igniter pant. We sold out, and we probably should have made more, quite honestly, because the Igniter pant is an interesting piece where we developed it for a very specific application, which is basically a base camp insulating pant and or a supplement to very, very cold summit days where a softshell climbing pant and a base layer alone won't get it done. And we had it for women's, and we're sold out now. We do have plans to continue to run the Igniter pant for fall 11, which will be kind of coming up. And in the meantime, I know it's not perfect, but some women can fit into a men's small, and it's not perfect, obviously. But in terms of this being a real technical climbing pant, it's more of an insulating sort of base camp and very cold day summit pant. And so I think it can be a little bit more forgiving on the pant. Obviously, we don't like to ask women to wear men's stuff. I think that they're asked to do that by other brands, and maybe some women do that. We take it very seriously with Melissa and Caroline and some of the other women on our guide team that we engineer product for women to wear in the outdoors specifically for them. There's this line I love that the industry has called Shrink It and Pink It, where you basically just take the men's style and, you know, shorten it a little bit and take the sides in a little bit and throw it in a bright pink color. We don't do that. Everything we build is from scratch. And so stay tuned for the Igniter pants to sort of come back in line once we get some more from our factory partners.
Great. And these are also the 100-gram insulation.
Exactly. If you, I called it the Primaloft tuxedo when I was in Aconcagua. I had the pants and the jacket between the Serrano and the Igniter pants. That's what I would wear at dinner. Even it was when it was sunny out, when we were up at 14 and then 19,000 feet, it got cold. And so you'd sit around and eat dinner and drink your hot drinks in your Primaloft tuxedo.
And the outer fabric on all these first ascent pieces that we've been talking about is that 20D ripstop nylon. So we're not talking about a coarse, really heavy fabric, but something that is durable and ripstop and light enough to layer with.
That's correct. Exactly. Everything that we do in these technical first ascent layering pieces is 100% nylon, and it's ripstop, and so the tear strength is very strong. Everything comes with a DWR finish on it, like we were talking about before, so it will shed light rain and snow and obviously block the wind. And they layer quite easily over pretty much anything you might be wearing. They slide on and off really quickly. They're soft. They're packable. They're very compressible. It fits with the entire tenor of the garment. If we were to take really lightweight insulation, synthetic insulation, and put a big, heavy, burly fabric over it, the design logic wouldn't seem right to us, and our guide team, they wouldn't get it. If you're going to go with a big, burly fabric, you probably go and you're engineering more of kind of a parka, just to stand around and wear around in maybe more of a sort of commuter environment or just a less active environment. These are really built for people that are on the go that have a premium on weight and performance.
And there's nearly full side zips on these.
Yep, we call them sort of a 7/8 side zip, which is it almost comes all the way up. The idea is to be able to give you very easy access over any kind of boot, climbing boot, certainly a ski touring boot to the extent that you're doing that in very cold conditions, anything. You leave them unzipped in your pack, at least I recommend doing that, and then if you get to a situation where you need these, you pull them out, the zips are already undone, and you easily slide your legs right in, and you zip the zips down, and you're ready to go.
And there's a little bit extra fabric on the seat and the knees for reinforcement.
That's correct. On the seat and the knees, it's a little bit more durable fabric, and that is basically just for high abrasion areas, especially around base camp where there can be rocks and other things you might be scraping up against, just to make sure that the life of the product holds up when you're around camp and you're on your knees, either starting your stove or setting up camp or getting your gear sorted. We think it provides a little bit more protection. And we didn't do it all over to try and make sure it was as light and packable as possible. But in that high abrasion area of the knees and seat, we did reinforce that.
Okay, and these come in black?
Come in black, yeah, pretty standard. And they're a great piece. You know, we got a lot of folks that are doing winter ice fishing or winter sledding, not sort of just like pedestrian sledding, but, you know, adventure sledding, a cross-country sled, sled touring, I guess. I don't do that personally, but we've had requests from interesting folks up in northern Wisconsin, northern Minnesota, southern Canada, right along the border there, where it can get pretty darn cold, and these folks like having these just as an extra measure of insulation for those deep winter months.
This definitely translates over well with those that are going to be sitting around camp inactive, I mean, as well as activity, but, you know, definitely if you're going to be inactive, you need something extra to insulate your legs.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. And, you know, the thing about the igniter pant and the igniter jacket a little bit is that as you're active and inactive, it goes back and forth. And so for someone that's just going outside to stand around and do something outside where they just need to be warm, these are a great choice. But as backups, and even as emergency pieces, if you're in really cold weather backpacking, and, you know, maybe your plan is to get into camp and be on the go and set up camp and then dive right into your bag, they're light enough, and certainly depending on the conditions you're in, that to bring them as a backup in case you have an emergency situation or you just need a little extra warmth because you can get quite cold, these are a great option for that. And so the folks that are into cold weather backpacking, I think, have really responded well to these pants as well.
I like the ability to be able to unzip the sides even for ventilation at times. If I get a little bit warmer for whatever reason, I can let a little bit more air in, you know, ventilate a little bit. It's just a little bit more of a way for me to regulate my body temperature.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and those side zips are handy so that you can do that. And they're nice and long. I mean, the last thing that we wanted to do is if you're going to have a zip on there, and for whatever reason it's not helpful or it impedes your ability to do something like ventilate or get your foot in there with a boot on or something else, we figured if you ran it all the way up the side, it has the most flexibility. And we didn't come all the way up, so it wasn't on your hip bone when you're wearing a pack, if you're using that in that situation. And also that you didn't have to worry about it coming undone, so that then reattaching it sort of awkwardly from the top, sometimes that can be a little bit of a problem as well. So we came almost to the top. So you'll see that same thing on our Rainier Storm Shell pant, which is our hard shell waterproof pant. It's the same logic.
Yeah, and if it dips down a little colder than expected for whatever reason, I like to be able to slip these on, you know, under my quilt or in my sleeping bag to give me a little bit extra warmth. And again, I can unzip them a little bit if need be. I don't feel the zippers, so there's no problem there. And very versatile for me. I think it's outstanding. I know that there are lighter options that people can get, and I'd say that some of them that I looked at, again, are because they have less insulation, and some of them may not have the zippers and things like this. But I think most of us who have been out and done any type of expedition-type backpacking or just winter sports and activities in general out there understand what it's like to try to get in and out of things with boots and all of that without getting wet and so forth. So this makes it very versatile.
Yeah, absolutely. And on balance, like we were talking about before, the more that we can make it easy for people to really love their gear and to have it work with them and not fight their gear, that's really what you want when you're out there. You want to be focusing on having a good time. You want to be focusing on potentially the, you know, the very serious thing that you're doing. If you're climbing, you need to be paying attention to things, and especially if you're on Rainier and in crevasse areas and other things with high hazards, avalanche danger, etc., you need to be dialed in to what's happening. And if you're not futzing with your gear, that's good. You should be focusing on what you're doing and then enjoying the success of an expedition or a job well done afterwards. The minute you start worrying about zippers and poles and things fighting against you, you're not concentrating on, at a minimum, just having a good time, and at its most extreme, making sure that you're really paying attention to what you're doing if you're in a dangerous situation.
Yeah, definitely. As you've mentioned, there's other products in the First Ascent line. Obviously, it goes much wider than just synthetic insulation options. Would you briefly share a little bit about the other products in this line?
Sure, absolutely. I'll try and be brief. We basically architected it the same way we talked about with our layering system. And so at its most basic, we have an entire spectrum of base layer products against the skin, moisture management layers in different silhouettes, quarter zips, crews, different weights, midweight, expedition weight, that provide that first measure of warmth and protection for moisture management against your skin. Then we have a whole complement of insulating layers. We have fleece layers, different weights of fleece. Cloud layer fleece is 100 weight. We have two 200-weight fleeces, the Hangfire hoodie, which has a hood, and a Point Success jacket, which is a Polar Tech Wind Pro product. We obviously have the synthetic insulating layers we talked about in terms of the Serrano jacket and the Igniter jacket. And then we have a bunch of down options. We have our Downlight sweater and vest, which really are the modern interpretation of this down sweater that we invented back in the 1950s. We have a Mountain Guide down jacket, which is a little bit heavier, a little bit warmer, a little bit more down insulation in it with abrasion-resistant shoulders as a great sort of base camp coat as well as just general-purpose cold weather coat. We have a Peak 15 jacket that is our burliest, not heaviest, but certainly our warmest down jacket. And then we have a whole range of soft shells and hard shells as well as sort of the outer shell layer before you get into heavy insulation when it gets really cold. A mountain guide jacket, a front point jacket, which are our two soft shell offerings, and then two hard shell jackets, the Rainier Storm Shell and the BC200. And the BC200 is a product we're really excited about. It's a three-layer garment to 20-25, for those of your fans that know what that is. It's really high levels of waterproof protection and breathability in one package. Extremely lightweight, under 11 ounces. We also have some accessories. We have socks, and we have hats, and we have buffs, and we have some other stuff. But that really is the essence of the First Scent Alpine line. And then we also have a small ski capsule, if you will, built for people that are skiing big mountains up in Alaska. We have an entire ski guide team that we could go into. I won't do that right now. And then pieces that are more sort of free ride appropriate for folks that are doing things either in the backcountry or resort skiing and just venturing into new things in terms of the whole free ride movement that's going on right now. We have jackets and pants, or actually a bib and a jacket and pant in our first Descent series. That's kind of what we call our ski line. So that's just a quick snapshot, but I think what you'll find is it's very well edited to have a few pieces in each different category, only what you need for a couple of very specific things, but on balance, the entire assortment allows you to mix and match a lot of different options to satisfy a whole wide array of adventures that folks might be going on. And we think that with all this stuff, we try not to have a lot of choice for people so that they're overwhelmed. We try and engineer things that are perfectly suited for a couple of different activities and then allow people to put together their own system depending on where they're going.
Great. That's a fascinating line. I'll be looking into a little bit more of that. I encourage listeners to get on the Eddie Bauer email list, too. I've seen some great deals come through that.
Yeah, please do. You can visit our site, and I know that there's an opportunity in there kind of at the bottom of the page to sign up for email. Visit the site and browse around, and certainly if you have any feedback or questions, get in touch with us. You can call customer service. You can email us, and certainly we'll try and make sure that we're answering your questions, and if we can encourage you to try out some stuff, it'd be great. I think you'll be really impressed.
Is there anything else you'd like to add before we go?
The one thing I would say, back to the very beginning of our discussion, is that I think a lot of people are skeptical about Eddie Bauer and potentially even First Ascent. And I say that candidly just so that your listeners know that we're in this for the long haul. We take this very seriously. We're doing this with a team of world-class athletes and guides. These are some of the folks that are at the top of their game. They're outside in the mountains hundreds of days a year and collectively have decades and decades of experience doing this. Give it a shot. Have a look at it. I think you'll be very impressed with the quality, with the thoughtfulness of the gear, and I think that for folks that are interested in exploring a new line that we think really has something differentiated to bring to the market, I would have a look at it. I can tell you my own personal story with the sort of reconnection with Eddie Bauer is one of real fascination of what this man built and some of the things that he did. And we're trying to reclaim that and honor that legacy. And so I'd really encourage folks to sign up for email, hop into one of our stores, look online, and if you have any questions and we can be of any service in helping you try this stuff out, I really think you'll be satisfied when you get the product. I know hundreds of people have, and our guide team obviously stands behind everything that we do. So have a look. I think folks will be quite impressed.
Cool. Andrew, it's been great talking with you. I'll be sure to put a special link to the First Ascent website on the Practical Backpacking Podcast site.
Fantastic. Thanks for the call today, and I really enjoyed speaking with you and all the listeners as well. I hope this was a great session for them. I had a lot of fun.
You're very welcome. I did too. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening. The Practical Backpacking Podcast is financially supported by its host and a few kind listeners. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to show your support, please visit practicalbackpacking.com to donate and access other Practical Backpacking services. This podcast is copyright 2010 by Practical Backpacking. All rights reserved.